Dr. Raymond Perry, who is a pediatrician at UCLA and a research fellow in the Robert Wood Johnson Clinical Scholars Program. He completed his undergraduate training at University of Maryland College Park, medical school at Emory, and residency training at University of Chicago. His primary research interest focuses on adolescent health and includes preventative sexual health, the use of new media resources for health promotion, male sexual health issues, and health disparities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'll be following up on what Rebecca's already talked about. We've done further evaluations regarding the hookup, and so this presentation will be about a couple other phases that we've been working on over the past couple years. I have nothing to disclose. So as most people here are aware, teens are disproportionately impacted by sexually transmitted infections, as well as unplanned pregnancies, having among the highest rates compared to other age groups here in the country. Unfortunately, there are many barriers to accessing reliable sexual health information as well as services. Some of the barriers are social, including the stigma from either their peers or from their family members regarding sex and sexual health issues. There are transportation issues, financial concerns, lack of awareness of resources that are in the community, lack of awareness of their rights to seeking sexual health services as minors. So there are lots of things that teens have to deal with, even when they are interested in seeking the information or services. And so it's important that we find innovative ways of connecting teens with this information and engaging them with resources in the community that can be helpful. Over the past probably decade or so, there have been an increasing number of text messaging-based interventions that have targeted health outcomes. And studies so far have shown pretty promising effects of using these sort of interventions on both health behaviors as well as ultimate health outcomes. However, most of the studies that have been done so far have focused on adults and have dealt with chronic medical conditions. Fewer studies have actually looked at the effects of text messaging for health on adolescents or looked at preventive health goals, such as those related to sexual health. Many people, if you've been around teens, have teens, work with teens, or just walk down the street and seen teens, you see them, they're on their cell phones all the time. The average teen text messages over 100 times a day, and teens are using their cell phones for shopping, for playing games, music, all sorts of other activities. As a result, we think that teens may be the most receptive to the use of text messaging for health promotion. So the aims of these phases of the study were first to gain teens' perspectives on the use of this preventive sexual health text messaging service called the hookup. Next, we wanted to evaluate the impact of the hookup on sexual health knowledge, self-efficacy, and behaviors, because that's really why we're doing these sort of interventions. And lastly, we looked to determine the characteristics of teens who are most likely to subscribe to the hookup. So Rebecca already spent a fair amount of time going over what the hookup is. It was developed by California Family Health Council and Internet Sexuality Information Services Incorporated. She mentioned that it sends out weekly messages to all subscribers, and it also has a teen clinic locator service, which teens just text their zip code and get a response with up to four local clinics that offer free or low-cost services to teens. So here's another example of the messages that go out. Many STDs don't have symptoms. If you're having sex, get tested to know, and then it gives instructions on how to get the locations of clinics in their area. Other topics that are mentioned are abstinence, the importance of communication with parents, with healthcare providers, with their partners about sexual health decisions. It talks about options for birth control and emergency contraception, and also provides information about minors' rights to sexual health care services in the state. So first I'll talk about the focus group study that we conducted. This was done in collaboration with two Los Angeles area teen clinics. We recruited both outreach volunteers at the clinics as well as patients there, and ended up with a total of 26 participants who we held four different focus groups with. The majority of the participants were female, and that was more of a result of that's who was at the teen clinics. There unfortunately aren't as many male patients there or males involved in the outreach activities, so this is more reflective of the people that we're recruiting from, more so than a reflection of who was interested in participating in the study. Average age was about 16, and based on the communities that we worked with, the majority of participants were Latino or Black. And then we just wanted to make sure that the teens we were working with were teens that used their phones a lot, and as you can see, these were teens that were using text message daily. So the themes that came out of the discussions that we held focused on two main areas. First, the qualities of message content. So we talked about the messages that they received over the course of the time period that they after they signed up for the hookup, and what were the important qualities of those messages. And they also talked about things to consider when using text messaging for health promotion, particularly with sensitive issues such as sexual health. So the teens talked about helpfulness, the educational aspects of the messages that were important. And also, they said it's important that the messages are simple and understandable, and that they're things that they can talk about, so they're sociable and topics that they could share with their friends. When thinking about text messaging as a tool, the things that they mentioned that we need to consider are the convenience of text messaging, any cost issues associated with messages, and privacy issues. And Rebecca touched on some of the cost things that came up. And it is a free service, so most of the teens said, well, cost isn't really an issue because most of them have unlimited text messaging. And I think most parents have given in to the fact that teens are going to be texting all the time, so it's best to have an unlimited plan. So here are a couple quotes that the teens mentioned when it came to talking about the importance of simplicity and helpfulness of the messages. One teen said, most kids already don't have common sense, so it's hard for them to link up an idea. So when you have it in a simple format, it's like, oh, of course. So they liked getting these succinct messages that dealt with things that they understood and that were relevant to their lives. Another teen said, me and my friends talk about sex a lot. It's good when you can throw out facts and real solid information instead of just experiences or whatever you think you knew. So they really used this information to inform the conversations that they were already having with their friends, but now they felt like those conversations were going to be better because they were talking about reliable information. When thinking about the use of text messaging for health promotion, one thing that kept coming up over and over was kids said, well, we're always on our cell phones, so this is a smart way to get the health information to us. When thinking about privacy, most thought getting text messages about sexual health was good because they felt that it was a private way to get that information. One teen said, maybe it's a way for them to learn things without anybody finding out, so nobody knows that they're doing it and it's helping them. However, because teens, are close together, they might either intentionally or unintentionally, show their phone to someone else. That sense of privacy might be compromised at times. And so someone said, if someone else sees that message, they might think what you're getting. You know what I mean? They might be a little bit self-conscious about getting messages related to sex or sexual health. So privacy goes both ways. And most teens felt that text messaging was a good way to get the information because of privacy, but they mentioned that there were some other concerns. So now I'm going to spend most of the time talking about our impact study, which was the school-based study that Rebecca referred to. So for this, we collaborated with one of the public high schools in Los Angeles. The school enrolled about 450 students in grades 9 through 12. It served a predominantly Latino community, and about 70% were from low-income households. And this is pretty reflective of most of the public high schools that were in Los Angeles, so it was a good representation for the city. After recruiting the entire student body to participate in the study, about 74% of the students received parental consent, which I was pretty pleased with, given the nature of the topic being sexual health in a school setting. I also formed a community research advisory board with parents and students and teachers and administrators to talk about the project both before it got started to address any concerns ahead of time, as well as to sort of track the progress and discuss the implications of the findings after the study was complete. So for this study, the students that received consent were randomized at the individual level to either intervention or control groups. And we had an encouragement intervention design, which meant that the students that were assigned to the intervention group were pulled aside after the pre-intervention survey. And there we told them about the hookup, talked about the benefits of signing up for it, potential risks of using a text messaging service, instructed them specifically on how to subscribe right then and there. And then 2 months later, we sent letters to those students to encourage them to sign up if they hadn't done so yet. The post-intervention survey was then conducted 4 months later during the school year. For the analysis, we first looked at the characteristics of students that were predictive of subscribing, and for this part, we looked at just within the intervention group to all the students who'd been encouraged to sign up and compared the characteristics between those students who subscribed and those who didn't subscribe. And then we looked at the impact of subscribing on sexual health by doing a multivariate regression analysis. We looked at both an intention to treat model and a treatment received model, and I'll get into the details of that a little bit later. So our outcomes that we were interested in first were sexual health knowledge, self-efficacy, and behaviors. For the knowledge score, we looked at 8 separate items on the survey. They were true-false questions, and they dealt with topics that were that dealt with messages that were sent out during the intervention period, so we could see direct effects from the messages that we sent out on the knowledge outcomes. Next, we looked at self-efficacy, and for this, we created a scale with 3 previously validated items. And this, we looked at the confidence in getting condoms, their confidence in using condoms every time if they were having sex, and lastly, their confidence in discussing the decision to have sex with their partners. And then lastly, for sexual health behaviors or intentions, we looked at three separate outcomes. For students who reported having vaginal sex, we asked about their condom use at last sex. For all students who were sexually active, we asked about their intentions to get screened for STIs within the next year. And for those who hadn't had sex yet, we asked about their intentions to have sex within 1 year to see if exposure to the sexual health intervention either encouraged or discouraged thoughts about having sex. So on to the results. First, the demographics. So we had 329 students that participated. Slightly more females than males. Average age about 16. And as mentioned, this was a community that was predominantly Latino. So the demographics of the participants were reflective of the entire school population. About a third of the students were sexually active at baseline. We found, looking at condom use, about 70% said they'd used a condom at last vaginal sex, which is slightly higher than what's seen in national studies or in local studies, too, when looking at YRBS results. Of the students who were sexually active, about 20% said they'd had four or more lifetime partners, and only about 20% who were sexually active said they'd ever been tested for STIs before this. So the intervention uptake was a little bit lower than we'd expected or hoped. Based on the focus groups, and the positive feedback that we got there, expected more students to be excited about signing up for it when we encouraged them to do so. Only about 40% of the students in the intervention group actually signed up for the hookup. In addition, there were a small number of students in the control group that signed up, and they probably heard about it from friends of theirs that were in the intervention group because they were all in the same classroom and, same activity, same lunch table, and probably talking about this once we started doing the project. We asked the students in the intervention group that didn't subscribe why they didn't, and the most common reasons that they selected were either that they didn't have a cell phone, they weren't yet thinking about sex, or they already knew how to get the information. So there was a range of reasons there. And then, as mentioned, we wanted to know what were the characteristics of students who actually subscribed. And compared to non-subscribers, we found that subscribers text messages a little more frequently, and they are also more likely to be sexually active or have more partners. For the analysis, we first did an intention to treat analysis. So for this part, we compared everyone in the intervention group to everybody in the control group. In this model, we didn't see any statistically or really clinically significant differences in any of the outcomes, knowledge, self-efficacy, or behaviors between those groups. And we think that this is likely because there was a relatively low uptake of the intervention within that group, so it might not have been enough to really show an effect compared to the whole control group. So then we did a treatment-received analysis. So for this part, we compared the outcomes between all the students who subscribed to all the students who didn't subscribe. And because we already knew that there were some differences between subscribers and non-subscribers, we controlled for those differences, the texting frequency and the number of sexual partners that they had. And then we also thought, well, there might be some things that we didn't measure that we couldn't measure that also differed the subscribers and non-subscribers. So for this, we did what's called an instrumental variable analysis. And this actually showed that there weren't any omitted variables that we needed to account for in order to fix the model that just looked at all subscribers versus non-subscribers. So we were able to use the original model just fine. So first, looking at sexual health knowledge, as you can see at baseline, there wasn't much of a difference between subscribers and non-subscribers based on their average score of those eight items that we were looking at. However, at post-intervention time, the subscribers did have a statistically significant increase in their score compared to non-subscribers. For self-efficacy, as I mentioned before, we included three items in the scale. The range of scores was 0 to 3. They got 1 point for strongly agreeing or agreeing that they felt confident in either getting condoms, using condoms, or discussing sex with their partner. At baseline, the subscribers did have a slightly higher score, but this wasn't significant. However, at post-intervention, the subscribers did show an increase in their score that was significant when compared to the fact that non-subscribers didn't have an increase in their self-efficacy. So the important thing really is behaviors. Well, that's what we want to change ultimately. However, we didn't see any change in behaviors or in intentions in any of the in subscribers compared to non-subscribers. We broke it down into sexually active and non-sexually active students. When looking at sexually active, we didn't see an increase or change in condom use that differed between subscribers and non-subscribers, nor did we see a change in intentions to get screened for sexually transmitted infections over the next year. For the non-sexually active students, We looked at the proportion of students who said that they intended to have sex within the next year and then compared subscribers and non-subscribers. Both groups had an increase of about 50% over the course of the intervention period of students who said, who basically went from saying they didn't have intentions to saying that they did think that they would have sex within the next year. But the overall percentage between the two groups was not different. And so basically this showed that the change among the subscribers wasn't due to the intervention, most likely. So in conclusion, as a result of the focus groups and the impact study, we found that teens are receptive to the use of text messaging for sexual health promotion. And a limited promotion in a school setting did result in modest uptake, but we think that being able to do an enhanced promotion would make it a little bit better and hopefully increase the uptake. The hookup appeared to have a positive impact on sexual health knowledge as well as self-efficacy. However, we found that changing sexual health behaviors or their intentions is more challenging. I think that's a common theme across all sorts of different interventions for sexual health or other health behaviors. The study was limited by the limited uptake of the intervention, as I mentioned before, so we may not have seen the ultimate effect size because we didn't have enough students actually sign up for the service. This was conducted at a single site. Generalized may be an issue when looking at communities outside of Los Angeles that may have different demographics. And also, subscribers and non-subscribers in the intervention and control group were all in the same school. So even though we only, you know, we specifically singled out the intervention group to talk about the service, they probably talked about it at the lunch table or in their sports activities, and there may have been some crossover effects between the groups, which also may have diminished the effect that we saw. And lastly, this was a short intervention, only 4 months during the school year, and particularly when thinking about behavior change, it may take longer than that to see an effect of the intervention. So this year we're doing the study at two separate schools, so we can have an intervention site and a control site, and hopefully that will address some of these limitations. So I certainly like to acknowledge everyone that helped me in this project and everyone that participated. So I'll now take any questions that you have. Yeah, actually, so most of the students did have, about 80% of students said that they had their own personal cell phone. And that was the same in the intervention and the control group. But among the students that didn't subscribe, there was a slightly higher percentage of that. So.
You say about 20%?
About 20% didn't have a cell phone, yeah. And that, you know, it was different by grade, so many more seniors had their own cell phone compared to ninth graders. Well, I don't know. You know, we don't have any way of tracking what the students themselves were sending between each other as far as text messaging. In the focus group study, you know, a lot of the kids said that they were forwarding these messages onto their friends. So those, you know, are we consider to be reliable and appropriate. Whether or not they were taking the messages and adding, you know, or changing what they saw, what they got to something that they would send to their friends, I don't have any way of knowing that. This year, we'll be asking the kids about some sexting. It's not really going to tell us what they're doing with the messages from the hookup, but it will give us an idea of you know, the frequency of sexting within the student populations in Los Angeles.
I think the name of the program is Smarty, with a catchy word, hookup, although it means, you know, when I hear it, it means something else to me. You know, but do you think that the success of your program is to some extent to attracting those
Yeah, and I mean, I think Rebecca's better at it. I wasn't involved in the development of the hookup or its name, but from the feedback that I got from the students involved, they all thought that it was, like, that got their attention. So they did mention, you know, we did hear, well, the name, they're like, it's catchy, it gets their attention, but in some ways, yeah, there is the other connotation of hooking up as actually engaging in sexual activities. And so in that sense, some kids said, well, we weren't really sure what it was about, whether it was preventing inappropriate sexual behaviors or whether it was like some sort of hooking up service. So, yeah, and I think Rebecca can speak to that.
The only other thing I would say about that is on our materials, it doesn't say who we are. You know, it just says the hookup on it. As soon as you seek out our text, as soon as you go to the website, you can see, you know, who we are and who's sending the messages, and that we are a statewide, both state and federally funded health organization. But in making a decision about how we would launch this project, in order to really have impact and reach young people, we decided to just kind of put ourselves out there with a catchy name. And I do think that it has probably led, you know, more young people to try and figure out what our service is and whether or not it's appropriate for them. But I think that we're very true to who we are and who our messages are coming from, and that they're coming from a very, you know, reputable place.
Do you have any response from young people with the work clinic? We're doing something similar in South Carolina. We're going back and forth about calling a health service locator or a clinic locator, because our young people don't like the work clinic. So I was interested to see if you've heard anything about that.
I didn't hear any response, positive or negative, about it. I think they just sort of understood that that's how you find a clinic. And I mean, I guess that the idea of going to a clinic can sometimes have negative connotations for teens, because it's like, why are you going to the clinic? But for the sake of finding one when they need it, and the simplicity of just using that one word, and it's an easy word to spell, easy word to text, I think it worked. And so they really like the clinic locator service, and I didn't hear anything negative about using that word in the keyword.